Welcome to the Steam Team Podcast with Brian Briggs and John Samuelson. Join us as we talk about all things science, technology, engineering, arts, and math related. For more information, go to steamteacher.com. Hello, and welcome to the Steam Team Podcast. Brian Briggs is sick, and he's not here. So you just have to settle for me, John Samuelson, in Portland, Oregon. I really think Brian Briggs is sick, though, because it coincided with the Packers getting eliminated from the playoffs. So wah, wah, wah. Sorry, Brian. I just feel like me being a Bears fan all the time now and not making the playoffs. So we'll kick it over to Brian. But we have a special guest. She'll tell you where we're coming from. So, Tara, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, because she's been up for like ever, and we're really happy to have her on. So go ahead and introduce yourself, Tara.
Yeah, so my name is Tara Linney. I'm currently in Singapore, though for the last like 4 days I've been in India, so I'm not really sure as to what time it is. Because they're on the half hour there, which makes it even more confusing. But
It does make it confusing. It really does.
So yeah, I've been out here in Singapore for, this is my third and final year, and I came from the States. I've worked in Illinois, DC, Philadelphia, and here in Singapore, I'm at the Singapore American School as an ed tech coach.
Okay, that's cool. And so where did you work in Illinois?
Crest Hill.
Crest Hill. Okay, I was from Chicago area. I taught in Chicago Public, and then I was Oak Park Public Schools is where I'm a product of, Oak Park, which is like one block west of Chicago. I could throw a rock and hit the border. But then, Illinois is not a bad state. They're having some problems there, though, with their funding and stuff like that. People are moving away from Illinois in droves. I feel like the state is going down. It's going down since you've been in Singapore. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I hope it ends up in time for ISTE this summer.
I know, right? Are you going to go to ISTE?
Definitely.
Definitely. I think the last time I saw you in person, maybe the only time I saw you in person, we were running around the streets of Philadelphia with Scott Bedley and Sarah DeTeacher at about like 1 a.m. Isn't that correct?
That sounds right.
It was. That was before. That was actually, I think that was like, I like to kind of poke fun at her a little bit. I think that was before she was Sarah DeTeacher. Now, she was just kind of like Sarah DeTeacher then, but now she's Sarah DeTeacher.
Oh.
Because she's big time, right?
Well, she's beyond Sarah the teacher. Now she is Sarah the doctor.
Yeah, I followed Sarah the doctor too. She's like, I think I'm going to play around with this account for a little bit. I'm like, oh my gosh. But yeah, it's funny. So we're happy to have talked to you. And I'm sorry that Brian couldn't be here. Was he part of your Google cohort back in the day where you guys did Google trainer kind of people or whatever that is?
Yeah, so Brian and I met like back in 2014 for the Google Certified Teacher, Google Teacher Academy, back when it was Certified Teacher. And it was like just an awesome experience because we were at Mountain View, which is like motherboard all Google. Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, I still have pictures. They come up on Google Photos with like flashbacks and I'm like, oh.
Oh, because you guys are kind of like, once you do that, you're kind of bonded, right? When you go through one of the, I'm kind of bonded with them because we went to Mountain View. We just did Raspberry Pi Academy and that was just like 2 days, you're done. But we're still feeling like we're kind of bonded too.
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot of these academies, especially, I would say like Google has been like the biggest one for me. But then sure. I did Raspberry Pi this summer. And I don't know if it was the jet lag of flying from Singapore to Rhode Island or if it was like the chocolate covered espresso beans, but there are like quite a few people from that cohort that were like, we bond over Raspberry Pi, but also over chocolate covered espresso beans and insomnia. Yeah.
That sounds good. Boy, that's a one. Singapore to Rhode Island. Holy cow. You are world traveler. My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's good. That's fun. I mean, that's good. I'm old, so I have kids, so I can't travel anymore. So I just sit here. In North America my whole life, going like, boy, it's so much fun in North America.
But North America is really great because there's what, like, three countries in North America. Plus, there's like 48 contiguous states, and you're connected to Canada. Like, Singapore is an island. Like, you have to travel if you live in Singapore because it's half the size of Rhode Island.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay, these are good. See, this is why I don't get out much, so this is where I get my geography, I guess, then. So, but we do have something else to talk about. So when we reconnected, we were talking, you tagged me in about a Kickstarter. And I think it's an interesting way to go with a Kickstarter for a book that you have written, but you need, what was the Kickstarter for? You need like editing, and what are the stuff that goes into writing a book? Because I see all these people write books and I feel like I probably could, but I don't think I have it in me. So tell us what inspired you to kind of like get started and do the Kickstarter for the book.
Definitely. So, well, first off, with writing the book, that was a combination of the Google Teacher Academy from a few years ago and just wanting to write a book for a while, but not knowing for sure what it would be about. And then this summer going to ASCD, Association of Supervision and Curriculum Development. Whoa, I said that in one breath.
Okay.
And they
have bonus points right there.
Right. I remembered the acronym. They had an emerging leader where we had like 6 hours to work on an action project. And the expectation is that we like bring it to life. And I'm like, I'm going to write this book. And so within 3 months, I sat down at a lot of Starbucks locations and just like drowned out the background sound with Ingrid Michaelson and hammered it out. And yeah. So to answer your question though, is in terms of like the Kickstarter, so there's a lot of different types of books that are out there. Some are just based on practice, and some like people don't really do research necessarily unless it's their own action research. And it's kind of like a novel, if you will. With this though, there's like a lot of research involved. There's a lot of like data and numbers and things like that. And so the Kickstarter I set up for a couple of reasons. Number one, obviously the funding aspect, because normally if I was writing a book, I might just like publish it myself and edit it myself. But because I'm quoting different sources and things like that, I need someone to look over it and just make sure that it's up to code. And so...
No pun intended, right? No pun intended on the up to code.
Yeah. So that's part of the reason for the Kickstarter. And then the other part is to bring awareness to this issue that exists in the tech world around gender equity. It's something that people don't necessarily like to talk about. And there has been like a little bit of pushback in the last few weeks since the launch of the campaign, as there always will be. But it like brings light to the issue. And my hope is that like with the book, it'll help us get out of this whole like gender gap that exists in the professional world by attacking it from the education point of view. Because there's books for girls and there's books on coding, but there's not one like as a teacher's guide for how to bridge that gap.
Why would people, what are their reasons? Like, why would they think that writing a book like this, I saw it and I was like, oh, this is a good book that totally interests me. So why would they push back on you?
Yeah, I would say out of 500 plus interactions that I've had, like because I scheduled like a bunch of and personalized a bunch of tweets during the Hour of Code Week and things like that, there have literally been like less than 1% of people who have just been like, no, I want no part of this. And with two of the people in particular, their whole standpoint was, well, it should be coding for all, and what about the boys? Which makes me kind of chuckle a little bit.
Right, kind of a silly standpoint, but okay.
It is.
If they want to go that way, I guess. I mean, right. I mean, coding's for both. I mean, it's definitely, I agree that we need to get more student. I'm just interested in how to get students coding. But I mean, I think I pay definite attention to like, okay, if I'm doing like the Wonder League robotics, I definitely want like my girls to not feel like it's just boys, you know, club coming in, and I want to make them feel comfortable, and like that's something that really interests me. I mean, we've all got to be concerned with equity, I would think, as an educator, right?
Yeah, well, and like so the sustainable development goals that came out just a few years ago, so sustainable development goal number 5, which they replaced the millennial goal, is all about gender equality. But the thing with like gender equality, like equality is treating everybody the same way. But equity is giving people what they need in order to succeed. So we can't just go in and say, okay, we're going to treat all boys and girls the same. Like, girls need that little boost that gets them, like, builds up their confidence to be able to be in the same environment as the boys with this new thing.
Mm-hmm, I agree. I think that, So, how much have you done, like, so when you're a technology coach, how much have you, like, what is your main way to reach students with coding? Do you do computer science? Like, tell me a little bit about your, like, for my job, I mean, I work in a pretty large school district. I try and push in and kind of introduce teachers that might not be even, like, familiar with computer science. And I imagine it's probably different somewhere else in the world that they might be a little bit more familiar with it, or, you know, just kind of give us a rundown of, like, how you got interested in coding, I guess, in your current job.
Definitely. And just being on, like, another side of the world, I'd say that there's a lot more similarities than there are differences. Okay. There's this expectation, like, oh, it's an international place and, like, kids are going to do things differently. And that's not always the case. So I like to do things with purpose. And that tends to be, like, a girl thing, too, in terms of if we're going to code and we're going to use robots, let's not just have them battle against each other, but let's, like, create a story around it, or, like, have some type of purpose that one can become attached to, not just doing it just because. So, and working with teachers a lot, I'm very, like, standards-based and curriculum-driven, because I understand that that is what the teachers have to assess, and that's what they have to teach. And so any type of tech integration that I do always links to some type of standard or curriculum. It's never, like, a one-off just for fun. And so, like, for the Hour of Code Week, for example, I asked teachers, I'm like, all right, do you want students to focus on critical thinking or creativity, or integrate your geometry standards? And so based on that, we were able to, like, kind of personalize four different routes for students to take, which was great, because, like, the teachers were able to see that engagement and empowerment and student agency.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting. I try and do that too. Like, I think that when I first started doing this little, you know, whatever this is, little coaching job or whatever, you know, here out here on the West Coast, Tara, we call them TOSAs. Do you know what TOSA stands for?
Teacher on Special Assignment.
Teacher out at Starbucks all the time. So I just sit in my coffee shop, and I usually, like, just sit there and plot little lessons or whatever. I feel like that, right. I feel like that's something that teachers are kind of slowly getting to understand, is that you can do some computer science and you can do a lot of coding, and it doesn't necessarily, like, I like to use Scratch. Mm-hmm. Scratch is one of my favorite. And I mean, I feel like there's different things that you can do with Scratch that can be embedded throughout just, like, all subject areas. When I'm working with students, and, like, let's say I could really kind of notice it when I did, we piloted the Little Bits coding kit. Okay. Back in, and so I was using it with a third grade class, and the boys really like to do Scratch, and they like to make, like, silly games and do, you know, and be creative with it. And so I feel like the girls kind of are like, oh, you know, that's silly boys or whatever, right? And I agree with them too. I look at them, right, silly boys or whatever. They were doing some cool things, but I feel like when we integrated the Little Bits and we did, like, the code guitars was the lesson that we did, I feel like the girls were really into, like, doing coding to do change something in the physical environment. And I feel like that really resonated with them a lot more than just kind of, like, making a game in Scratch or animating your name in Scratch. Am I on the right track? Has that been your experience?
It's been part of the experience for sure. So, like, physical computing is basically, like, the next iteration from coding, right? And mm-hmm. so, like, everybody has this huge push on coding, coding, coding. But what coding, like, the whole purpose of coding is that computational thinking aspect and that ability to, like, think through problems and, like, creative problem solving, essentially, right? But with computational thinking, that's where, like, the real job market's going to be in the next couple of decades, because there's going to be so much automation that people are going to need to know, well, a couple of things. They're going to need to know how to hack systems for good, so that they can beat the bad hackers. Like, there's a white hacker.
Right. It's like an episode of 24. We need the good hackers to defeat the bad hackers.
Exactly. I was thinking Scandal, but yeah, same.
Same exact thing.
And then the other need is going to be people. So, like, when robots become, like, this big thing, as we're starting to see already, like the conference that I was at in India, there is a speaker. Her name was Heather something.
I know her.
Right? Yeah. And she lives in that state that's above your state, Oregon.
Okay. Oh, I'm in Oregon. She's in my state.
Yeah, she's in your state.
Okay. I have to know her. She's probably like right down the street, like trying to like knock on the door and I'm not answering.
Probably. So. I'll find her on Twitter because like we were just tweeting. Okay.
Okay. And, I'll find her.
Okay, cool. So like she had a robot that was on a screen and she showed like this really cool animation of like how the robot, it's called the chore bot. And it was taking over the chores of like a human, like taking the dog for a walk and making the coffee and sweeping the floor and things like that, right? But the thing about it is, like as these robots start to come to market and as we get these self-driving cars and things like that, there's gonna need to be like physical people who understand how those pieces work together. And that's where physical computing comes in. And I find that girls like, the girls that I've introduced to things like Raspberry Pi and Makey Makeys and things like that, especially with the Raspberry Pi, like it stumps them because it stumps most students at first when you just have no instructions. But they have fun with it. Like, yeah. And they learn everything from like inputs to outputs to, oh, cool, I can do this thing in Scratch. And yeah, and you've got somebody in California, her name is Amanda, and she makes these really great...
Right, well, I know what you're talking about, Amanda Hawes, and she was at PyCademy with Brian and I. I know exactly who you're talking about. She does great things.
Oh, yeah. And has everything from, like, Scratch to Python, and just, like, how-to cards and how to plug things in, and it's, like, really, really cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when you're writing your book, so I mean, I'm always looking for, I don't know. So it's something that really is of interest to me. Like I really want to be cognizant of like I mean, I'm a white guy, right? I hope last time I checked, but I mean, right. And I don't like everything being a white guy's club. I'm not one of those white guys. I like to promote. So what are some of the, like, without giving all of your stuff away for your book, what are some of the things that you've found that we can do as teachers besides just actually kind of getting kids started with computer science? What are some things we can do to make sure it feels like, and that just the white boys club?
So one thing for sure is like the inclusion aspect. So whenever you're doing things that are in content areas like math and science and like any type of STEM area, ensuring that like you've got an equal ratio of girls to boys that you're calling on. And then whenever like you're doing partner activities, number one, don't leave it up to random draw, especially when it's in things like coding. And then number two, if you're doing coding for the first time and having kids team up, don't let them choose their own partners, because what happens is boys will go with boys and girls will go with girls. Now, that's really good for building those bonds, but what we're actually trying to build here is an equitable environment. And if the boys are the ones who are always great at coding and so on and so forth, but they've only ever experienced working with boys, then they're going to become those like CEOs of companies that are like, girls don't know how to do that. They could just be a secretary or something, which there's nothing wrong with being a secretary, but like they won't help girls move up the ladder, if you will.
Right. So like, all right, so let's say I'm doing this. So now I'm trying to reflect on myself here, see if I'm being a person that's hurting the system. So we did first for Hour of Code. Hour of Code is great, but I'm pushing on Hour of Code. Like every week is an Hour of Code week to me. I'm trying to bring in a new class. I have so many classes that I can bring in. So like we just did a first grade and they haven't really been exposed to coding at all. So it's kind of their first exposure. So we do Scratch Junior. We have the iPads, we get the iPads fixed up or whatever. So when I'm doing that one, you're suggesting that when we go with partners, just start them right off and just kind of, you want teachers should select and kind of put boys and girls together on the same iPad, because we don't do like one-to-one on Scratch Junior. We do make them do partners, and like some of them drive and some, you know, they take turns and try and learn teamwork and cooperation and collaboration. So you're saying as if I go in and do that next week, I should pair up boys and girls together, kind of in my mind, I should do that.
Yeah, and similar, like have similar, I guess, personality types together. So don't have it like your gate or your enrichment kids are all together, and then like your low level learners are together, and like, you know, or you have one low level and one high level. Instead of basing it on ability, like base it based on like your outspoken versus your shy. Because if you put one outspoken student with a shy student, and if it's a girl boy, regardless of which gender is which, then the outspoken student is going to be the one to kind of like take over, right? But if you have two outspokens together, then it balances that equation. Yeah, and it creates more just equity and voice.
Okay, that's good, because I mean, I do that all the time, you know, and it's like, there's a lot of times when I don't really know the students. So sometimes I go into certain situations, the teachers let them choose partners or whatever. But if I kind of can go in beforehand and say, okay, teacher, this is how we're going to select partners today, I'm sure that they would go ahead with that. And, but you know, it's just, it's like a hodgepodge of whatever it might, you know, that, you know, it's me. I'm just floating around. I just, you know, I'm wheeling in with my, you know, venti latte and bucks to teach a lesson. No, all right. So anyway, I'm just kidding. I don't even go to Starbucks. I go to Black Rock Coffee, and that's a local Oregon chain. So, I'm looking at some of the titles from your chapters. So what would you say are just some of, in general, some of the more important things to do when you're kind of instructing with coding? I always think, you know, I always think of Ask Three Before Me. I see that as one of the chapters. And I always think of that great app that was Ask Three that kind of went by the wayside or whatever. But talk a little bit about that. Like, so when you're going with coding, the more you kind of can go through and teach it a little bit, I feel like I'm getting a little bit more savvy. I don't feel like I'm an expert coder, but I feel like I get a little bit more savvy with steering them to answer their own questions. Whereas before I'd just be like, oh, get the scissors and then you can get rid of the scratch cat.
Yeah. So definitely like one of the things in coding is like there are almost always like a few different routes to success, right? And it's not like a multiple choice worksheet where it's like, oh, it's right or oh, it's wrong. And so getting students to think through problem solving through questioning rather than saying do this, do that, do that. And then what we like to practice is a hands-off approach. So like if you're helping, you're using your words, not your hands, right? And it really like gets the students to say, to move beyond saying like move that there and do that and that, that, that. They actually have to use words that the program uses, which also builds their vocabulary and their understanding and like focuses in on those speaking and listening standards and Common Core. I'm a standards girl.
Right.
Yeah.
You would love my friend Nicole Carter that I work with. Nicole Carter, when we're in ISTE, I'll introduce you to Nicole. She always goes, John, you need to bring it back to the standards. I'm like, okay, I will, Nicole. And I think it's good. It's good to have someone remind you of that stuff. You know, sometimes you're just the doofus teacher and coming in, and I don't want to be seen as the person that just comes in and does like fun. I like being the fun teacher, but I also like to be the like thought of as teacher that actually has a little to give to, you know, what the kids are learning and things like that. Definitely. So that's, yeah. So anyway, but that's, it's good to be, I think it's good to be a standards person. And I think I get with the vocabulary a little bit more, you know, so Scott that we were running around Philadelphia with that one time, so Scott Bentley, so he's a great teacher. We do Grumpy Old Teachers podcast together. And so Scott sometimes says when we're introducing coding and doing something, because he does a lot of different things. He has some good stuff. But what do you think that we go into it too much and we're too lesson planning with it now and trying to like there's like he said when code.org first started, it was kind of like go in there and you could get stuff. He's like, now it's all this lesson plans with standards. Do we have a tendency to make it too, can we make it too serious with lesson plans and things like that?
So it's too structured when you get those like do this and then do this and then do this. Mm-hmm. In some of the programs, so like in Swift Playgrounds, for example, it tells you exactly what to do, but at a certain point you have like free reign to do whatever you want and create whatever you want. So it makes sense in a way, but when we're teaching those things, students don't like reading all the instructions. Like Khan Academy, for example, has this whole computing section, and I put one of my girls on it, and she was like, do I have to watch all of these? I'm like, technically, no. I mean, you can jump to the challenge if you want to. And so she did. And then as she needed to, she would jump back to the videos. Because like when we talk about personalizing like student learning, putting them at the helm of like what they're learning and how and when and all of those things is super important. So giving them choice and not just saying, here's your prescription, now go follow it. Like, I don't follow doctor's prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do I look like I follow directions? I don't follow directions at all. I mean, that's like, I probably will do the opposite of what you tell me to do if I follow directions. I mean, that's the way I am. That's why people use reverse psychology on me. I feel like that's kind of what Scott was saying. He's like, you know, and I understand it, and I do try and use vocabulary. What do you think when you're starting out with coding? Because are you mostly elementary or are you up a little bit like middle and high school?
So currently I'm mostly elementary, but I'm also the mentor for we're still figuring out how many teams, but at least two teams for the Technovation Challenge. And one of those teams is a pair that's in high school. And so that's all using like MIT App Inventor and figuring out like, A, what's the design of what you're gonna create? What's it going to do? Its purpose, its function, all of that. And then B, how are you going to put it all together to like make a working app? And so that has been like, I mean, it's been really, really fun. Because part of it, like that does have a prescribed curriculum, but the main thing about it is like figuring out what you want to make and then using those like curriculum pieces to make it, not just mm-hmm. learning the curriculum because it's the curriculum.
Right. So when you think of elementary, what mm-hmm. do you think are the like basic vocabulary words? Like if you had to pick out that you kind of try and use when you're in instruction to kind of just kind of start to get them going a little bit, if you're just introducing, like, what do you think are the most important, I don't know, vocabulary or just like things to start with when you're coding?
Well, it really depends on the program. I would say a couple that are universal are loops. Like what mm-hmm. What does a loop do? And the fact that it can look like a repeat, or it could look like a repeat once or twice or a forever block or something
forever
like
loop,
that.
Right?
Yeah. And then, also using variables. So like elementary students in particular don't necessarily use variables in math, but it's a way to level up their understanding. And with a lot of like the block-based programs, even with like the script-based programs, there'll be like degrees whenever you're designing something, and it's got to be like on this XY axis, or it's got to turn by this many degrees. Integrating those math terms in where they fit, and kind of pre-teaching that maybe before they learn about it formally in a math class.
Mm-hmm. I think the variables on Scratch is one of the things that I think is probably has the most potential, but it's the one that I probably know the least about as we're going through. And I feel like that's something I have to work on a little bit. But are you familiar with Code Campus? Have you ever looked at Code Campus? Okay, so it's basically, you know, I love Code Campus, and I'm trying to work with them a little bit in our district, but Code Campus is basically like 10 lessons, and they give you the videos, and it's for teachers to learn Scratch, basically, and it's all free, and it's really cool. And so I feel like when he showed variables, I was like, ooh, and I was like, I feel like I need to repeat that section again, but I felt like there were some really cool things. I was like, oh my goodness, that just, I feel like variables opens up like just a world of possibilities.
Oh yeah, it definitely does. It looks like we have a Singapore Code Campus.
Okay, so I mean, right, I feel like, right, if you ever want me to virtually introduce you to the to Raj, the guy that does the videos, I talk with him a little bit here and there, because we're gonna try and, we're gonna try and get kind of a computer science base in all of our elementary schools. That's what we're trying to work towards for next year. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just going through, and it's just right, it's a lot of talking to people that aren't really familiar with coding, right? But you have to try and make them understand and why it's important and things like that. In your book, are you going to, I see some of the part four the chapters in part four. So do you have a lot of like, what do you think like your one best idea for like integration and reading without giving it like all away? Like what's one of your, like, I think a lot of people would be like, I don't see how you can do coding and reading besides the fact that you're reading, you know, block coding. What's one of your activities that you have?
So there's a couple. So one, for example, is like digital storytelling. So having like the story go into a certain sequence. And that could be done on like Scratch Junior and different things like that, where you're making the different scenes. And then the other, which is not like full on reading. I mean, it has reading elements to it for sure, is like the, when students are like creating programs and they're trying to figure out like why this isn't working, having them like read it like it, like they would a sentence. And like, if you were to read this as a sentence, would it make sense? Because like, if you break the coding pieces into like sentence words, then you put the transitions in and things like that, then if it reads like a sentence, then it should work.
Oh, that's good. And that's a good way to debug programs, right? Then just kind of get them to go back and read it out loud and mm-hmm. and go through it. That's a good idea. Okay, I'm totally using that now. That's in my toolbox now. My toolbox, which needs a lot of work, trust me, on the coding. So when you're I think it's great that did I not cover anything you want to say else about just getting gender equity in coding? I mean, is there any message you'd have for teachers that are just kind of getting started or even just starting with coding in general? Like what do you think are important characteristics for a teacher to have?
I think an iteration mindset, which there's a chapter that talks about that. So like we've got like the innovator's mindset and we've got the growth mindset and the fix and things like that. But iteration is all about trying things in different ways until you reach your desired goal, right? Versus innovation is like, trying different ways and then coming up with a new goal. So getting teachers to understand that like you don't have to be perfect, right? So first off, like you come in prepared, like having gone through the activity first, and maybe you didn't get it right away, and you know, you give it like 20 minutes depending upon how long the activity is, but 20 minutes to practice on your own, then introduce it to the kids. And if you get stuck, be okay with the students taking the helm in terms of debugging something or in terms of having the right answer. And when you do stop to teach into like a teachable moment when it comes to coding, don't let it take more than 2 minutes. Like if it's a concept that takes longer than 2 minutes, have the kids explain it in a shorter fashion that the students themselves will understand.
I think that it's a tough one for teachers. When I was talking to the first grade teachers about Scratch Junior, they're like, I feel like the students will know more than I do. Yeah. And I just said, yeah, and that's okay. I think that's great. I mean, you can learn. I don't know why sometimes it's hard for teachers to learn with the students. I always kind of felt that was one of the more fun things about teaching. Now that I'm just a toast out at Starbucks, I don't have those moments as much. But I mean, when you have your own class and you learn with students, I feel like students go, yeah, Samuel doesn't act like he knows everything. I think that's kind of cool. He's kind of one of us, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So yeah, it's tough though. It's easy to say now, but I think it's tough for some teachers to let go of that a little bit.
Well, and a lot of it is like teacher preparation programs, because like I went through mine 8 or 9 years ago. But mine was like in a direction in which we were moving towards the more student-centered and student like independent learning, if you will. And but I remember like a couple of courses that I took, and definitely like getting certified like at the state level and all that. There were some definite messages around you've got to know your stuff, right? And that's like just 8, 9 years ago. And higher ed takes a little while to change, a little longer to change than other things do. So I could definitely understand teachers being stuck in that mindset of like, oh, I've got to be perfect and I've got to be right. But like in life, that's not how things go. And if we're always trying to be perfect, or if we walk away from things because they're too frustrated, then students will then model that behavior because like you did it, so it must be right.
That's good. Okay, so here we go. So here, I'm going to ask you some freewheel questions right now. So Brian and I are total, we usually do a thing called Kickstarter Corner. Now, obviously, we won't do Kickstarter Corner tonight because I think we call it Crowdsourcing Corner or something, because we have your Kickstarter, right? And I know that Brian and I have both funded back to Kickstarter. So on this one, what are some, I have a ton of stuff here. Okay, so I'm ashamed. But like, here's my, I have my Sphero Spark over there, right? I have my Spark Fun Makey Makeys. And Tara, I have like tons of them over here because I'm trying to get them to teachers. I just got my Wonder Workshop little thing where you can code it with the tile. What are they called? They're called the Puzzlets, right? That's the new one. I have like my Sphero Mini right here. And then here's R2-D2. And I won't even say, but I've got like three Ozobots right here. So on that one, all that stuff is fun. Oh, and I even bought these. These are the new ones. I got the new The Blockstills Challenge cards, which just came in. So I've got stuff everywhere. What are some of your favorite, like, do you have any little favorite tools or anything that you've seen that really connects with students that you really like? Because Brian and I love this stuff, but we have serious spending problems.
Yes. So I like Dash and Dot, which is made by Wonder Workshop. And they've got this really great robotics competition. And so our school, like, got a whole bunch of them. But one thing that I ensured was that all of my fourth and fifth grade students, because they're my responsibility, are not allowed to have access to some of the apps that literally just allows you to drive with your finger. Now, they have figured out a way around that. But I'm like, no, we're going to use these. Let's, like, treat them as more than just, like, cars that you control with a finger.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I do like the Dash and Dot robot because, like, the founder has, like, he's written so many, like, articles and things, especially in EdSurge, just around how he got feedback from his children in terms of the design to ensure that it wasn't too much of a boy thing or too much of a girl thing. So I like those for their gender neutrality. And let's see, I like Raspberry Pis because, like, they're really challenging. And I find that, like, so, like, at conferences, for example, I was at, I presented at one here in Singapore a month ago. Wow, I present a lot. November? Oh, my God.
November. That's good. You should. You're young. You should be out presenting a lot. I'm old. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's good.
It takes a lot. But I had, like, a screen. I would bring it back. It's over there. But I had, like, a computer screen, and then I had the Raspberry Pi, and I had all the cords, and I've got literally a whole drawer. Oh, no, it's my bag now. But I've got a whole bunch of different hats for Raspberry Pi. And so I just laid them all out, and I'm like, okay, there are these task cards if you want them. And they're like, no, we don't need those. And these were, like, high school teachers. But it was so awesome to see them kind of, like, toy with just how to get it to turn on first off, and then how to get, like, the lights to light up, and then using the instructions every now and then. But, I mean, watching them for, like, 20 minutes just toy around with that, like, that's what we should be getting our students to do. But I think in order to get comfortable with getting our students to do that, we actually need to be comfortable doing that. So
I think it's, yeah, I agree with you. So, you know, we're doing, so it's funny you should say all this because it'll tie a neat little bow and everything, but we're January 6th, we're trying a conference and we're calling it Tinker Code Make. And so we're doing it in conjunction with Wonder Workshop. And so Naomi from Wonder Workshop is helping us a little bit, and they're going to give some of the new Q robots to some of the teachers. So I haven't even promoted that stuff yet, which is what I've got to do after I finish up our podcast. Yes. I have to keep working. What do you say? Yes. Yeah, I've got so much work to do. But so we're trying. So this is what we're trying to do, and it's just a small 4-hour kind of thing. But we're kind of like combining everything possible that we can. But we're gonna bring out all the, we have a lot of, so in my room, right now I have a lot of tchotchkes, as I like to call them. Mm-hmm. But so we do have a lot of the things where the teachers can kind of look at them. So we're gonna have them go in a big room around with all of our stuff, kind of look around, and then we're gonna stop everybody, and then they're gonna do pick whatever they want, and they do 2 30-minute hands-on sessions, like with Raspberry Pi or Bloxels or Little Bits or Makey Makey. And so we'll have all the stuff available, and we'll have some facilitators. And then we're going to stop, take a little break, and then we have a gentleman named Rob Van Nude from Tinker Camp, and he's going to do, like, a design thinking challenge with, like, plastic and cardboard and duct tape. And so we're going to do a challenge for an hour. And then afterwards, like, I think we always kind of miss the processing time. So then we're just going to have like a little, you know, unconference style breakout where people facilitate conversations.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to try. So I'll let you know how it goes. But yeah, Naomi from Wonder Workshop's helping us.
Yay. Oh, that's awesome. I think I saw something on Twitter saying that she is in Hong Kong right now. Like, what?
Is she really? I know she was stuck in Atlanta Airport. Atlanta Airport lost all their power yesterday. So she was having a hard time in like Hartsfield Airport. I know that. There was like a big to-do yesterday. It was like, yeah. Wow, see, this is why I can't travel and present anymore. This is why you have to do it. You have to do it.
That's crazy. And was it even snowing in Atlanta?
No, just the power went out or something.
That's weird. The power kept going out in India, but, well, everything still operated.
I wouldn't know. I'm a North America guy. So I'm a North America white guy, I guess. So anyway, well, congratulations on getting your Kickstarter funded. And Tara, thanks for taking the time with us. It's great talking to you just about coding. And then when you go to Chicago, I owe you a beverage of your choice, Starbucks or whatever. You let me know.
Yay, or bubble tea.
Oh, bubble tea for sure. I love bubble tea.
Sounds amazing.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, see you, and we'll catch you on the flip side.